Come stop and take a trip down on my block. On. Where you see hidden potential, young minds sharper than Ginsu. And ain't afraid to speak their mind if they got something against you. Nope. We standing with you, we tackle issues like civic pride. Hate will cease to exist, just put our differences aside. From my side to your side, from Dutch Town to South Side, from Penrose to North Side, from Benton Park to Old North, to West End to West Side. We blessed when we step out, we stand down, rise up, stand together, wise up.
This is Stitchcast Studio, produced by St. Louis Story Stitchers in St. Louis, Missouri.
This is episode 5, recorded live in our St. Louis Story Stitchers Zoom room with special guest Dr. Lori Punch, who's a trauma surgeon at BJC and a Washington University physician. This episode focuses on trauma, so listen in.
They say who that, but you already knew that. That be them Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers.
Hey everybody, it's Emira here, Program Director for the St. Louis Story Stitchers. We are back, Stitchcast Studio Podcast, and today we are so glad we have a very, very special guest from WashU, Dr. Lori Punch, a trauma surgeon. How are you today, Dr. Lori Punch?
I'm feeling good. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. First off, I would just say, do you want to kind of introduce yourself to us, you know, give us a little bit about yourself, you know, something that people may not know, you know?
So, yeah, I'm Dr. Punch, and like you said, I'm a trauma surgeon. I've been in St. Louis for about 4 years. I was born in D.C. I grew up in Ohio, and I did all my training to be a surgeon in Baltimore. Came to St. Louis. I moved to Ferguson post-Ferguson. I have a 7-year-old son, and I do a lot of work in the community around the issue of gun violence, but really more do work around helping folks get access to their power to influence their health and their lives.
Cool. So I guess I'll jump off with this first question, which I think people will be really interested in, is what kind of motivated you or inspired you to become a trauma surgeon? Was there a career path you were, you know, going for before this? Or, you know, how did you kind of just get into it all?
Yeah, I definitely never had thought in a million years I'd be a physician, and never thought I'd be a surgeon, for sure. People ask me, like, how can you stand all that? And isn't it gross and bloody? And my younger self would have been like, yeah, there's no way I can stand it. Yeah. But I'll tell you what happened. First of all, when I was in college, I wasn't sure what I was going to do when I was done. And I took a year after college to do 3 things. One, I worked in a lab doing science on opiates. 2, I volunteered at a drug recovery center. And 3, I worked with a Christian organization on campus. And after those things, I kind of thought, well, do I want to be a pastor, a social worker, or get a PhD in opiates? And somehow I decided being a physician would be all 3 of those things. So that's how I ended up at medical school. But what is that? That's the mind, body, and soul, right? Mm-hmm. That I was drawn to the way in which all of those things go together to make people who they are, and that health and tending to people's health physically, spiritually, and emotionally is a combined effort. And so that's how I ended up at medical school. How I ended up as a trauma surgeon was when I took that a step further and I realized that social factors, the way we treat each other, are an enormous factor in our health. And trauma is the experience of energy transfer, and some of the most intense energy that comes into a human's life is the energy that comes through the hands of someone else's behavior. Mm. And so as a trauma surgeon, you know, plus I'm, you know, I like to do stuff with my hands, and I like the physical aspect of health. And so it just made sense that trauma as a social disease, as a physical representation of our emotional and spiritual selves, it made sense to get involved in trauma surgery. Plus, I had some incredible mentors. A lot of times people don't realize you have this idea in your head, but then you see someone living a life that you want to live. You see somebody having the impact you want to have, and you're like, maybe I had some idea in my head before, but that's what I want to be. And I had some incredible mentors in Baltimore that took care of the sickest of the sick, of the people in the hospital, and those were the trauma doctors and the ICU doctors, and that's what I decided I wanted to do.
Well, that is amazing. Yeah, that's
wow.
I said that because my next question was actually going to be, what are things that we could do as a community to help stop the traumatic effects that the coronavirus might have on us as a whole?
So first, we have to understand trauma. We have to understand what it is. And it's more than a wound that's physical. Trauma is the disease of energy transfer. I already said that, but I want to break that down. Energy can come in a lot of forms. It can come kinetic, it can come emotional, it can come spiritual, it can come, you know, the laws of physics, gravity is energy, right? And that energy transfer can go from one being and one body to another. Trauma is energy transfer of any kind. Violence is energy transfer or trauma that's intended for harm. Mm-hmm. And we can experience trauma and violence as something it just kind of happened. Or no, this is something devastating in my life. And I think what makes the difference is this: the degree to which we have control over that energy transfer. Mm-hmm. When we have no control over that energy transfer, the trauma can overwhelm us. When we didn't see it coming, when it overwhelms us, when it overpowers us, what I think the root of the trauma of COVID is not simply that the horror of people dying and getting sick, and that's awful, but it's the way in which nobody can really know, right? You can't see it. You can't feel it. You don't know how long this is gonna last. Yeah. You don't have control. You don't even have the regular things in your life that you would normally use to kind of just keep yourself going, like school, work, and getting out of the house. Going to the grocery store is a big deal. So, right? People are having panic attacks at the grocery store, right? So what is it? So all of that is, there's energy out there and I can't control it. And that energy is a threat. Mm-hmm. Now, when your brain senses a threat, right? When your brain says, oh no, you're coming from me and I can't control you, your brain goes into one of three phases: fight, flight, or freeze. Because you have a part of your brain which is in charge of keeping you alive, right? It makes sure before you can even think about it, you have a response that's going to keep you alive. Mm-hmm. So you're either gonna fight it out, you're gonna run away, or you're going to literally just kind of be like, this is not happening. So how do we see the fight, flight, and freeze showing up in people's lives? I see it showing up in these ways. One, fight. You got the people who are super prepared. Their closet is full of toilet paper. they got the can of Lysol. They're spraying their children. I mean, they're ready. They're like, you ain't taking me out. Corona, you're gonna have to find somebody else. They're fighting it, right? Right? Mm-hmm. And I love that response. It's actually totally appropriate because we do have the power to fight it. And we have the power to protect ourselves with masks and hand hygiene, the two most important things, along with staying at least 6 feet away from people. And then you have the people, flight, who are running away. They're basically, unfortunately, I think, the ones that are at the highest risk because they're in denial, right?
Yeah.
They're in denial. They're like, this ain't real. Y'all got your little government hoax. And I'm like, I don't care where it came from. It's real. And running away from it is not going to save you. We have a lot of people who are almost, you know, they're actively denying that any of this is real or that they need to worry about it. Like the kids who went down for spring break in Florida. Right? On a TV talking about, well, if I get it, I just get it. It doesn't matter. That's flight. And then there's the folks who are freezing. Those are the folks I think that I'm the most worried about, because those are the ones who are at home and they're quiet and they might be really getting into a headspace where, you know, the demons are coming out and they're not getting a chance to even express how this trauma is showing up. And those are the ones that we as a community really have to reach out to. We have to check on our neighbors. Yeah. And I have a lot of people saying, listen, I don't want to, I'm not even going to ask you how you're doing because I know you're completely overwhelmed. I'm going to ask you, what have you done today so that you can be well? Did you drink water? Are you sleeping enough? What did you eat? And did you sit for 5 minutes and meditate? Those are the kinds of questions we need to be asking each other so we don't simply just freeze. Let's take the positive and the negative. So the positive is people been through a lot of this kind of stuff before. In other words, people are like, oh, there's so many people dying and it's so hard and I wish we could just stop it and control it. And I'm like, welcome to trauma surgery life. You know, like the truth is there's a lot of power and strength and resilience in our communities because we have dealt with a whole lot of stuff that was really hard to deal with in the past. And what I see is community leaders coming out in full force, connecting to people. Right here in St. Louis, we have a group called Prepare STL, which is a collaboration of a whole bunch of community groups really doing some just incredible work to support the community and specifically the disenfranchised. I also see people are checking in on their neighbors. I see people getting over old fights. I see people coming together and saying, you know what, listen, whatever we had in the past, we now have a common enemy. Let's work together so we can get through COVID. So I see a lot of positive things that are coming out of prior resilience and ability. What I'm worried about is that the truth is once you get COVID, once coronavirus is so prevalent in the community that just a whole lot of people are going to get COVID, those pre-existing medical problems and even the stress itself, and the way it suppresses your immune system. It does. Chronic exposure to stress suppresses your immune system, makes you more at risk for heart disease. We have all the high incidence of diabetes. All those things are going to make it so what could have been a mild case of coronavirus infection in a young person ends up being a critical case. We know that for all of coronavirus, about 80% of people get a mild infection, don't have to go and stay in the hospital, but 15% get a moderate infection, and about 5% get severe and end up in the ICU. And we know if you're in the ICU, the chances of survival get very low. I mean, there are people who are surviving, but it's very serious. So I guess on the one hand, I see a strength like I've never seen in people coming out and people helping one another. On another hand, I see the way the virus is taking care of long-term health problems. And I'm worried that as we've already seen, there's going to be more and more and more death in those disenfranchised communities and in specifically the Black community because of that pre-existing health condition. That is why it's so important that we reach out and help our neighbors understand, don't just freeze, don't run away. Let's fight together because this is real and we're the ones who are going to feel it the most intensely.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's good. Cool. Definitely huge enlightenment.
Hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. It's time for our Pick the City Up art interlude. Here's a brand new song by St. Louis's own Story Stitchers titled Wade.
Far from lost on me, undertones with tensions high. You hear them audibly, they hear but shouldn't be no more. Stacked against those that still survive, so still I tried. No, still I rise until I thrive and struggle isn't me no more. A queen taught me why the cage bird sings. Then a king came and taught me why the birdie doesn't sing no more. Too busy gnawing at the locks to get free. He gnaws until his beak bleeds. He knows one day it won't bleed no more. One day my beak won't bleed no more. One day he'll open all the cages, see broken, battered faces, crack a smile, cause they no longer have to wonder what it's like to be free no more. But you know freedom ain't free no more. He breaks free and ain't the type to break free and turn his back on all the other birds that ain't free. And so he flies to where the cage birds sing, and the next song the cage bird sings says,
we wanna grow,
even if it's good, we'll keep our heads above.
the water.
We wanna change.
Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water. Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water.
We'll find a way.
Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water, children.
She reminded me of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, eager to have a taste of that fruit that was so forbidden. Her parents sheltered her, thus St. Louis City was hidden. She became like Pandora, opened the box and lost the ribbon. Couldn't relate to her peers, so she remained quiet. She saw the kids in caskets, which then triggered the riots. Evil flowing from Zeus' gifts, you can hear my city crying. Now she's thinking, what if Adam and Eve didn't bite it?
Didn't bite it, 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 didn't bite it.
Keep our heads above the water.
We'll find a way.
Even if we're scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water, children.
Small, but I am a vagabond. I am a deity. Walk along my city streets. There is no weapon that forms against me. Blind, but I can see it. I see the atrocities done to my people. Wallowing in debt and self-doubt, the ones that can help us just laughing through the people. Or maybe it's a kaleidoscope. Maybe they see something different and there is no hope. Nah, I don't believe it. I believe that we can all do better. Take my pain and suffering, poke holes from end to end, spill out my blood, pick up a pen, and maybe I'll write a letter. And I'ma drop to sincerities. No formalities allowed, full volume, hear me clear and loud, because you know me, you can't hide from me. You've seen my face before, I'm the injustice in the winds. Yeah, I'm the one right at your door, I'm knocking, won't you let a deity?
Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water.
We wanna change.
Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water. Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water.
We'll find a way.
Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water, children.
Waking up in STL, thinking should I wear a vest? You hear it every day, it's a lot of shooters on the streets in the Midwest. This is the land of the curse, you say. Being verified with a gang to make it out is the only way. I think it's sad, the only news that's on the news is St. Louisans getting shot, young faces just fade away. I'm tired of hearing it, let's add positivity. I see everybody making it out of the city, out of this nitty gritty. If everybody contributes to the craft, we gon' make history. But what can I say? It's up to the people, including you, of course.
Including you, of course. Including you, of course.
We wanna grow.
Even if it's scared of the water, we keep our heads above the water.
We wanna change.
Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water. Even if it's scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water.
We'll find a way.
I'm just trying to stand tall like the Eiffel. But what you supposed to do when all your homies suicidal? All my life I'm trying to live large just like my idols. But if I don't, it's just a game charged of what I might do. And all my life my brothers break laws and duck the Bible. But clean guard, I hope your destiny finds you. Think back when we was kids, let that remind you that you can do anything.
We want to grow.
Even if it's good. Above the water,
we'll find a way.
Even if we're scared of the water, no matter what, we keep our heads above the water, children.
At some point in time in the next several weeks, the distancing shelter-in-place order is going to go away. And we need to think about this for a second. How many cases of the virus did we have when we went into shelter? Mm-hmm. How many cases are we going to have when we come out of shelter? It's going to be much, much, much more. So I don't want people to think that just because the shelter-in-place goes away, we don't have to be very, very careful. We actually are going to have to be more careful once the shelter in place goes away.
Yeah. With everything going on, you know, like in this day and time, would you be able to live without the internet?
Well, because of music, like that's the only big thing that'd be hard to miss regardless of happens, just not being able to listen to music.
So then another question for everybody, Dr. Punch, one that we had was what trauma can stem from not being able to have a graduation or a prom? Like, did any of you feel those effects of not being able to have your graduation or your prom? And Dr. Punch, if you have any input on this, you know, you can feel free to join in.
So I'm the class of 2020, and a lot of people have been saying like they feel like they've been like robbed from their closing remarks, closing out of the year. And it's like weird to be in a position, because I'm in college, it's weird to like not have that ceremony. We recently did get like an email from the university saying that there's a possibility that they might have a ceremony later on this year, but it's highly unlikely. And I talked to a lot of my friends and they said they probably won't be able to make it because they're like, everyone's moving, getting jobs, going to different directions. It's really weird, like how I would never have guessed like something like this would have happened ever in my life.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you have an expectation and a hope, something that you can't control changes that hope, it's trauma. And in particular, when it comes to prom or graduation, what are those things really about? They are about recognizing your accomplishments, your beauty, your relationships, and who you are as a human. And as young people, these events are what we call milestones. They just mark, like, when you get to this, it means you are now this. The question I would have is, how do we recreate those milestones virtually, right? You asked the question about the internet. We're practicing medicine over the internet. I mean, everything's happening over the internet. And so my question would be, you know, what creative ways can everybody, you know, can everybody use? I participated in a virtual event for medical students who found out where they were going to be doing their residency in. That's normally a huge celebration and public event, and that they found a way to do it over the internet. So it's, I think if we remember why we're doing the thing we're doing, we can perhaps recreate it in a way that preserves the meaning and lessens the blow of the trauma.
Yeah, that's really good.
When say that the quarantine and everything is dropped and everything feels sort of safe, what would be the first place that you would go?
I know I'm definitely going to an art gallery, probably just enough and going to like Maggiano's or something.
I would say for me, I would want to go like to a park and hang with my friends. Like, definitely. You know, like just to be able to, like, not even like a huge group, but just like a few people, you know, just to be in people's company, you know, because everything has been FaceTime or Zoom or text message, you know. So social distance, I feel like, kind of does something to you after a while.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not a homebody no more.
Just my church, because my dad's a pastor and we've just been doing it all virtually. So it'd be nice to worship together again.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
That intimate connection.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand that. So Dr. Punch, I thought a really good question that one of the youth came up with was, how do you triumph over your trauma?
I have to say, it's going to sound kind of boring, but because it's so simple, but it's super important, because essentially, when you experience trauma, your brain is gonna fight, fright, flight, or freeze. It doesn't stop there. You turn up the stress response. Your sympathetic nervous system, which is in charge of those fight, flight, or freeze systems, gets turned on and revved up, and you are hyped and you're stressed, and your body has high levels of cortisol, which is your stress hormone, and you're like, ugh, right? And over time, that can have an effect on every part of your being. And so what starts happening? You're nauseated, you're grouchy. Everything that everyone says to you gets on your last nerve. You just wanna sleep. things hurt more than they should hurt. The world feels just annoying and toxic. And so how do you undo that expression of trauma that your body has? Because once it gets past our brain, really our whole body experiences it. Okay, so first of all, the foundation of brain health is sleep. And because of the disruption of our day-to-day schedules with physical distancing, everyone's sleep schedule is all whack, right? So, and that's like the worst thing possible.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest things that I have learned to do is to really get intense about maintaining what I call sleep hygiene. That means some concept of a bedtime and some concept of a bedtime routine. That means turning the phone off because the fluorescent or the light from the screen tells your brain it's morning time and gives you all the wrong signals. It means getting comfortable. It means sheets. It means a pillow. And it means going to bed because it's time to turn all this stuff off and unplug. At this time in our life, it's even more important. And I take it sometimes a step further and add over-the-counter melatonin. It's very benign. It's not going to hurt you. It can help you if you're getting all these stress signals in. It can help you say, no, it's time to go to bed now. Getting an adequate amount of sleep, which for adults is 7 hours or more, is essential to being well in your brain. Okay, next is dealing with your intake. Your intake of actual food with real nutrition and water suffer horribly when you're with trauma. There's two directions people go. There's the sugar salt way where everyone just craves junk food. And then there's the I don't want to eat at all way that people go. And you need to be getting vitamins, real protein, real carbohydrates into your body, good fats. So basically eating food that looks like food, like that's not processed. Eating food that looks like the thing it actually was. That's pretty, I mean, if it still resembles what it once was, I think you're in the setting of COVID, I have really emphasized my plant intake. Now I know that's, I have the privilege to do so. I know not everybody has access to that kind of food, but I also know that there are a lot of outreaches that are trying to get food to people. And I think we need to take advantage of that. And the STL Mutual Aid, as well as Prepare STL, have information, as well as the Urban League locally here and other places across the country, on how you get access to food. It's super important. And keep your water intake up. Next is pain. Pain is the response of your body to not just physical trauma, but emotional trauma, right? Pain is your body saying, hey, that thing impacted me, and now something is on me, something has disrupted me physically, emotionally, spiritually, where I'm not intact, right? I'm not intact. I'm cut. You can be cut in all different kind of ways, right? We often ignore our pain. We don't tend to it, right? And I think it is so important that you sit with yourself for a second every day and tune in to where you're physically, emotionally, and spiritually feeling that pain and name it. Because if you don't name it, it drives your behavior, making you think the world is out to get you. When you say, actually, no, what's happening is I'm really pissed I didn't do my graduation. I'm sad I haven't seen my grandmother. And I'm really worried about how I'm going to pay the bills next month. When you sit and you just put it out there, it becomes something you can manage, work around, and think about, and you can literally dress the wound of your pain. I often see people just being like, no, I'm fine, I don't even want to talk about it. Then it controls you. When you name it and you put it out there, you can begin to heal. So that's pain. Next is stress. It's normal to have invasive, repetitive thoughts when you've experienced trauma. You go back and you relive what somebody said over and over and over again. You go back to that email you opened up, or so you got awful news. You go back to the day the lockdown came, you're like, oh my God, I'm not gonna be able to do all these things I wanted to do. And it just repeats itself. If you don't let that stress out through expression, it will live in your body and literally make you unwell. The body doesn't forget trauma unless you give it an opportunity to express itself. How can you express yourself? Writing, movement, dance, music, talking to somebody connecting, a painting, going outside and cutting the bushes. I don't know, something where you're expressing physically, just engaging your body and your creative side in whatever way you can. It's super powerful for dealing with that stress. I don't have to tell the story stitchers about that. Y'all know that very well. And then the last thing is very serious, it's toxins. So when we're experiencing trauma and we have pain and we have stress and we're not sleeping well, we're not eating well, guess what happens? Toxins sneak in and we start relying on toxins to do all the things that sleep and food and friends and art are supposed to do in our lives, right? We rely on substances and toxic people and toxic input, toxic websites, toxic TV shows, toxic ideas. We're like, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. So I'm gonna let this toxicity drug me out of not being okay. Now, in the setting of trauma, those toxins take on a whole new level. And so it's the time where people do everything from drink too much to obsess over a toxic relationship and everything in between. Right? That's normal. That's normal. Do you understand that trauma is the true gateway drug? The true foundation for most addiction is trauma. And so what do we do about it? This is hard. This is probably the hardest thing. You asked me, you know, before we started, what's a trauma you can't get through? You can always heal. You don't necessarily cure everything, but you can always heal. What happens is if that healing is dysfunctional, then we heal into addiction rather into wholeness. Now, and that's what I'm worried about more than anything. Yes, we'll find a way to sleep, eat, deal with our pain, and handle our stress through expression, but will toxins take hold in our lives in a way that we can't control? And that's where all those other steps are so important so that that doesn't happen. So those are my five steps to handle trauma.
Thank you for listening. And last but not least, we want to give a very special shout out to the StitchCast Studio sponsors, the City of St. Louis Youth at Risk Crime Prevention Grant of 2020, Stewart Family Foundation, and Missouri Foundation for Health. To learn more, visit storystitchers.org.
They say who that, but you already knew that. That beat them Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers.